Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another in our Journey series, interviews with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers. Today we continue our conversation with Lauren Winter. I mentioned early on, and you actually bring it up early on in the book, that your, quote, evangelical friends are always trying to trim the corners and smooth the rough edges of what they call my witness in order to shove it into a tidy born-again conversion narrative. And you've said that you've been drawn to the Anglican tradition, and yet when you described your concerns when you headed off for England, it was that you end up in an Anglicanism that was evangelical. Talk just a bit about what your understanding is of being evangelical or not being evangelical. And you make reference to David Brooks, a wonderful article which I read as well on Blue America and Red America, and how that helps you understand what it is that is evangelicalism, fundamentalism, Christian in your life at this point.
Well, as I say in that same chapter in the book where I talk about the Brooks article, people ask me, you know, whether or not I'm an evangelical, and my answer to some extent depends on what I think they're asking. If I think they're, you know, if it's a secular acquaintance of mine who I know is working with some stereotype that evangelicals are people who wear polyester pantsuits, listen to Amy Grant, and always vote Republican, then I don't think that I qualify, since I don't do any of those things. Within the Episcopal context, of course, it's a very different question. And there, I rather unabashedly identify as an evangelical, because there, you know, the question is, instead of a litmus test for style and political partisanship, it's often seen much more as a litmus test of scriptural authority and orthodoxy, frankly.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, those terms are slippery.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like when people ask me if I'm a feminist. You know, again, my answer is going to vary depending on who's asking and what I think they think they're asking about.
But it kind of goes to the uselessness of the labels without context in today's world. I mean, everybody has such a different working definition of every one of these phrases that you really need to end up doing a lot of term definition before you can commit to any of them.
Sure.
But you must have, as a person that began to wander beyond just now your own journey into some kind of professional encounters with BeliefNet, which is in a very different place theologically than a Christianity Today and so forth, kind of what are you learning about the lay of the land and how you relate and don't necessarily relate to the Christian subcultures that are in play these days?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of how many of us who come to faith as adults relate is that we don't necessarily, you know, we're sort of walking in a minefield. We don't know certain things that our friends who grew up in the church are maybe taking for granted. Second, because I didn't grow up Christian at all, it feels much easier for me to sort of piece together, I found much to my surprise that I love contemporary praise music. It took me a while to love it.
Yeah.
Whereas I have friends who grew up in a certain church and now they associate praise music with some set of things that I don't even necessarily apprehend.
Okay. So you're coming at things fresh.
Yeah.
Fresh eyes, and it's going very personal. And really, I think one thing that is fairly obvious about you as revealed in your book is that you've been an independent thinker and made your own decisions, and you've had fairly clear angle on things. You've gotten some kind of perspective on things that is the one that you're going to work with until new evidence is presented. So mm-hmm. So you're not a person that is without a kind of a referent point at all times.
That sounds good.
So when you think about this book and when you started to write this book, you structured it around religious holidays,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very engaging way to come at the material. Why did you do that, and what is the significance of that?
Well, I structured it around the liturgical calendar, I think, for two reasons. One is that Judaism has a very pronounced religious annual calendar. The holidays are frequent, and they're big deals.
Yeah.
So one very specific, concrete transition for me was sort of learning to stop thinking of the fall as the time that you have, you know, the Jewish New Year and the Day of Atonement.
Yes.
And instead think of the fall as, you know, the time, you know, prior to Advent or what have you.
Yeah.
So that was one reason. It was a concrete transition for me. The second, and I guess this gets back a little bit to what we were discussing about evangelicalism as a label. You know, in many ways, my spirituality is very thoroughgoingly evangelical, kind of privileging a personal relationship with Jesus and so forth. But in some ways, I think because I've been in the Anglican Church all this time, it's also very liturgical. And I'm a big, you know, evangelist for liturgy and liturgical calendars. And I suppose one of my hopes for the book is that maybe some Christians who aren't coming from those liturgical traditions, traditions that don't spend a lot of time thinking about Advent, for example, or a liturgical calendar, might pick up the book and see some of the wisdom of those ancient practices.
How are you, when you step back from it, how are you viewing the comments that we hear from Gallup that Americans are on a spiritual journey? 80-some% say they're asking spiritual questions and so forth. Do you think that we are on a spiritual journey as a nation, and what is the nature of it? And how did yours fit within that?
Well, I think Americans, very much in part because we've never had an established church, have always been a people who have been prone to spiritual reinvention.
Yeah.
Now, 100 years ago, that may have meant, you know, switching denominations. Today, it may mean that you grow up Catholic and find yourself instead, you know, a yoga practicing Zen Buddhist meditating Jew or something.
Yeah.
So I am aware that I am, in this way, part of a statistical trend.
Yeah.
Of sort of picking and choosing or converting.
You know, it's interesting. I've started to personally just draw a distinction between spiritual journey and pilgrimage.
Hmm.
And the idea that the pilgrim is a person who has committed to a path.
Mm-hmm.
It's still got messiness to it.
Sure.
But it's got a direction to
it.
Whereas, it's funny, I talked to like Rick Moody, the novelist,
mm-hmm.
and he and I talked about it, and he talked that you got very uncomfortable with the squishiness of the idea of spiritual journey.
Hmm.
That there's got to be an edge to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the edge comes when you switch from being just kind of a vague spiritual seeker to actually being a pilgrim that's got a sense of direction. And that's obviously what's happened in your life.
Well, I think that's a helpful distinction. And, you know, people have said to me, sort of jokingly, sort of not, well, you know, like, when are you going to next convert to Buddhism or what have you?
Yeah.
Which is a legitimate question. On the other hand, to me, I see that Judaism and Christianity have a relationship with each other that Christianity and Buddhism do not have.
Absolutely.
So for me, this has been about living into the fullest relationship possible with the God of Israel.
This concludes our conversation with Lauren Winner. Thank you for listening to Journeys on the Kindling's Muse.